What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd here with you. Drancer will be on the show at noon. Big crossover Wednesday, of course, here on the show. Donnie and Dolly joining us also in the 12 o'clock segment. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. I am coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. As mentioned, it's a crossover Wednesday. We'll do that at 12 o'clock. Jason Bukla, also, as always, on Wednesday, joins us at 1 o'clock. Always looking forward to that. Johnny Lazarus from the Daily Faceoff. I'll chat with him at 11:30. But obviously, we will start the show open segment here, digesting what we saw and what we heard in Edmonton last night. That was a tough one. Let's get that right out of the way here. You thought like it was going to be a little bit more Canucks magic like we've seen in this postseason already consistently. Another game, much like game four in Nashville, right? Same situation. You're up 2-1. You're on the road. Chance to go up 3-1. You're pretty lifeless for most of the game. And then in the third period, multi-goal comeback, empty net magic from Brock Besser, although the goal eventually goes to Dakota Joshua, deflects in off him, but it's Brock Besser making the play. 2-2. And you're feeling like, hey, we've seen this movie before. We know how this ends. That's not how it ended that time. Very, very deflating, very, very anticlimactic, very, very frustrating end to the game as Evan Bouchard scores with just under 40 seconds left to give Edmonton the 3-2 win. And we are all knotted up. 2-2, this series is tied. And we are now in a best of three series between the Canucks and the Oilers to see who can advance to the Western Conference Finals. Now, Canucks have home ice advantage still, obviously. They're coming back for Game 5. If Game 7 is necessary, it'll be at Rogers Arena as well. So there is lots to like about the position they're in. If you had told people, certainly at the start of the year, that they'd be in this position, people would have loved it. I think even at the start of the series, a lot of people would have happily taken it. But that reasoning falls a little flat. It leaves you cold today. Because, yes, while they technically are still in a pretty good position, a decent position, tied in this series, home ice advantage in the final three games, they were on the cusp of being in such a better position. You get that first win in Edmonton. You really put Edmonton on the back foot, as I talked about yesterday. They were the team having to make a lot of difficult decisions, having to search for answers. And you had a chance to take a commanding, to take that proverbial stranglehold on the series, 3-1, push Edmonton to the brink, and not only did you lose, but you did so in a way that was kind of doubly frustrating, because first of all, you were flat for so much of the game, right? Edmonton comes out, complete opposite of how Game 3 started. Edmonton pressing the attack, spending time in the zone, hemming the Canucks in. Canucks really didn't generate much of anything through the first two periods. And you start to think, okay, this is not just happening. Calvin Pickard's actually making saves, unlike Stuart Skinner. And then again, they give you that brief moment of hope, flash of hope. Oh my goodness, are they going to do it again? And then the frustration doubles down. Even more so because it felt like they were going to find a way. It felt like they were going to find a way to come back and get that one to overtime and potentially get the win. So it is a very, very frustrating result. Despite all the good things you can say about where they are in the series, there's no way around it. That was a tough one. And you know who agrees with me? As we've all heard by now, Rick Tocchet. And we can get into a lot of the specifics about how that game went, how they lost it, what they need to do better tactically, all of those things, who individual players that need to be better. But I do think the biggest story coming out of the game last night is Rick Tocchet's commentary postgame. And again, I'm sure you've all had a chance to hear some of the clips, but the one that stands out to me most, you know, the talk about passengers and getting PD going and all of that, the one that stands out to me most is when he says, you know, there's five or six guys we need to get going. And this was almost right off the top, unprompted, actually in response to a question about, hey, can you take some positives away from coming back to tie the game? Rick Tocchet not having it, you're right? Five or six guys need to get going. Some guys, I don't know if they thought it was the playoffs. And that's the line that should really stand out here. That is a devastating critique to hear from your head coach in the second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Think about how central to just the identity of the NHL, to the identity of a professional hockey player, the playoffs are, and what it means to succeed in the playoffs, what it means to compete in the playoffs. What a privilege that is. What an experience it is. That's a huge part of the reason we all love the sport, right? The competitiveness, the intensity of the playoffs, the physicality, the emotion, all of it. We can see what it brings out in the players. We can see how much it means to them, and that makes it mean an awful lot to us because it's such a spectacle to watch. Again, that is absolutely central to being a professional hockey player in the NHL. Is taking the chance to compete in the playoffs and doing everything you absolutely can to win. For a coach to basically say, you're not living up to that standard. You're not meeting that part of what it means to be a professional hockey player. And not only are you not meeting it, I'm not sure you're even aware of what the standard is. I'm not sure you even get that it's different than regular season hockey. That's about as harsh as you can get from an NHL head coach, right? And now he didn't name names when he was talking that, although there's one guy we can pretty obviously put in that category. But that's about as cutting, that's about as harsh as I think you can get as an NHL head coach. Attacking, really, or at least calling out, critiquing a fundamental part of a professional hockey player's identity. The ability to raise their game, the ability to find that extra level of intensity, that extra gear in the playoffs. You know, we always talk about a coach, how a coach calling his team soft is kind of the nuclear option, the last resort for an NHL head coach, because it's such a loaded word for NHL players. It's one of the absolute worst things you can say to them, calling them soft, saying they had a soft game. So NHL coaches, they rarely go to that, right? Because they know how deep it cuts. When they do, they'll often do the thing where they kind of walk around it. Oh, you know, I don't want to say my team was soft last night, but and what they're really doing is calling the team soft. But they know they can't quite go all the way because it's such a harsh thing to hear. To me, what Tocchet said is right there with calling his team soft. And that's not a criticism. It's very understandable. And Rick Tocchet, one of the really refreshing things about Rick Tocchet this year has been he's not full Tortorella, right? Where he's looking for every opportunity to throw his guys under the bus, to rip them in front, in public, in front of the media. Obviously, he picks his spots, but when he does pick those spots to be critical, it carries a ton of weight. And that commentary last night, again, that might be the most frustrated we've seen Rick Tocchet in his time here, in his tenure as Vancouver Canucks head coach, because too many of the players on his team last night just did not recognize the opportunity they had in front of them to go up 3-1. They did not seize the opportunity to win a second straight game in Edmonton's barn. They didn't play with that sense of urgency, and I get it. Edmonton was the team that had their back against the wall. It's hard to match that level of desperation. Sure. But the Canucks weren't close. Through the first 40 minutes, the Canucks weren't close to matching that energy, matching that desperation. And I think that's what drives Rick Tocchet up the wall more than anything else, is just seeing that lack of push from his team. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Brian texts in, last night was a lesson they needed to learn. We'll see how quickly they learn. And that's a really interesting question, right? Maybe we look back at this as one of Rick Tocchet, the ultimate of Rick Tocchet's proverbial learning lessons, right? We'll see how the rest of the series goes. They're certainly not dead yet. They've got every chance to win this series. But that question that Brian poses at the end, we'll see how quickly they learn, that's the really pertinent question here. Because time's starting to run out. The clock is ticking. And I think that's especially true when you start to talk about Elias Pettersson. Right. And we're circling around it right now. But even Rick Tocchet, very blunt, very direct. Yeah, I don't know what else to say. Petey's got to get going. Petey's one of those five or six passengers he's talking about. You don't need to read between the lines. He basically admitted it. We can all see it on the ice anyways. We can all see it watching Elias Pettersson. And last night felt like a bit of a tipping point or a breaking point for me watching Pettersson. I think maybe for Tocchet and how he's handled Elias Pettersson as well. Because now it feels like your season is on the line, right? You were able to get past Nashville without him. You've beat Edmonton twice, getting very, very little from him. But at some point, you can't keep scraping by with one of your star players as a bystander. And that's what Elias Pettersson is. Passenger, bystander, whatever you want to say. He's just not making any sort of impact for this team. And last night felt like the moment where it went from something very frustrating but survivable to something existential, to something where if that doesn't change and change dramatically by tomorrow, certainly by game six back in Edmonton on Saturday, then it could be curtains for this team. And I think that's where the frustration and the emotion stems from Rick Tocchet, right? Is knowing that, okay, the runway has run out. There is no more, well, hopefully he can get it going. We're winning games. We beat Nashville. You know, we were up in the series and against Edmonton. This is go time right now. And if Pettersson doesn't figure it out, Rick Tocchet can do a lot of things, but he's not superhuman. If Pettersson doesn't do something in this series, very, very difficult to see how the Canucks are able to get past the Edmonton Oilers in the final three games of this best of seven series. Cole in Ontario says, not the whole team, but Pettersson, Cole, and Mikheyev are benchworthy. They are not playing playoff hockey. At times they had these bursts, but man, what a flopper. She loves. What a beast. That's from Cole in Ontario. By the way, somebody says he's making a bad impact on Pettersson. That's fair. If you want to get me on a technicality there, it's true. It's not that he's not making an impact. He is, in fact, having a negative impact on the playoffs right now, which is just an absolutely brutal place to be for a guy who has been so consistently excellent for the Canucks throughout his NHL career. And that obviously brings you to the question of, okay, well, what does Rick Tocchet do? You know, Rick Tocchet, he's not a guy to throw his hands up and say, hey, I'm out of ideas here. He's going to keep trying things. And he acknowledged the possibility of lineup changes. Guys coming out, bringing guys back in, maybe getting guys who came up from the AHL, as he's already done with Linus Karlsson, into the playoffs, into the series for the first time. And I want to be very clear here. When we start talking about lineup changes, this is not about, oh, Pettersson needs better wingers. He does. That's true. But that's a completely independent conversation from how below the standard his game is. And both things can be true at once. And I think there's been times at this playoffs, in these playoffs, and maybe even individual games where you could look at it and say, man, Hoglander, Mikheyev, they're really letting Petey down. But not consistently. And certainly not last night. And so, yes, would Pettersson have a better chance of success with better players? Sure. But we can also all look at where his game is and know that's not the only issue. That's not the main issue. That's not even close. He's out there on the power play with the other four best players on the team, and it's not like he's having a ton of success out there. So it's not just about who he's playing with. Having said that, I don't know how you roll out the Pettersson-Mikheyev duo again. I just don't know how you do that in Game 5. And it's partly about Mikheyev. It's also a huge part about Elias Pettersson, but you're just getting nothing from them right now. You haven't really gotten anything 5-on-5 from them all playoffs long, and now it's a major liability. It's always been a frustration. It's always been a huge obstacle that the Canucks had to overcome to have success against Nashville, to win those two games against Edmonton. But now it's just a massive liability. And I think item one for Rick Tocchet and the coaching staff is going to be making decisions on those two players. And I'll stop you right there. Pettersson's not coming out of the lineup for Game 5. Mikheyev, very much a possibility. So it's, do you keep Mikheyev in the lineup or do you take him out? I lean to take him out. And once you break Mikheyev from Pettersson, and they've been a rock-solid duo, and I mean that in terms of playing together every game, not in their performance, they've been a locked-together duo for these playoffs, but I think that's pretty clearly where you have to start if you're looking at lineup changes going into Game 5 against the Edmonton Oilers. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, and obviously tons of commentary coming in about Elias Pettersson. Would you call out Petey? And he's asking about Rick Tocchet hypothetically here. Would you call out Petey if you knew he was hurt? No. So I don't see an injury as number 40's reason for his indifferent play. And look, this is going to be a fascinating debate. Even once we hear, you know, whenever the Canucks season ends, maybe it's after a Stanley Cup victory. Who knows? That's still a possibility. Whenever the Canucks season ends and we get the kind of litany of here's what this player was playing through, here's what this player was playing through, we're going to hear something about Elias Pettersson. But we're going to hear something about a lot of guys. We're probably going to hear something about Brock Besser. Remember, Brock Besser didn't make the trip to Winnipeg for the final game of the regular season. Brock Besser has been the Canucks' best player in these playoffs. He's been a monster. So you can have bumps and bruises. You can have something wrong, something off, and still find a way to perform in the playoffs. Now, maybe Pettersson, whatever, if he is dealing with something, and I have absolutely no information about this, if he is dealing with something, does it rise above that kind of bumps and bruises level? Is it something more than that? Well, maybe, but as the texter says, I'm not sure Rick Tocchet has pointed in his commentary then if that is the underlying factor. So, yeah, we probably will hear eventually that Elias Pettersson has been dealing with something, but I don't, that's not going to get him off the hook. You can have something physically wrong with you in the NHL playoffs, and I think like, this is what Rick Tocchet is getting at. Yeah, you're banged up a little bit. So is everyone. You have to find a way to make that impact, to have that effect on the game, to do something for your team, even if you're dealing with something. And if there is an injury and it's so significant that it's completely crippling his game, then maybe, like, why is he in the lineup? Why wasn't he rested at the end of the season? Why is Rick Tocchet calling him out? So I don't know if we're going to hear an injury-related reason at the end of these playoffs, whenever that is, that completely lets Elias Pettersson off the hook. It doesn't seem to really match what we're seeing and what we're hearing coming out from Rick Tocchet on Elias Pettersson right now. This text comes in, 650-650. Todd has bad takes. Jamie, what lineup options do the Canucks have? Who are the black aces right now? Well, they got a ton of black aces. They called up, I don't know, 12, 13 guys from Avitzard when their run in the Calder Cup playoffs ended. So, obviously, we've already seen Linus Karlsson come in. Nils Åman was with the team already. He wasn't in Abbotsford, but he's drawn in place of Phil DiGiuseppe. So, Phil DiGiuseppe, who was out for personal reasons, I think Rick Tocchet said he'd rejoin the team today. Now, I don't know if they're not going to skate today. They're just doing media availabilities. So, is Phil DiGiuseppe an option for tomorrow? Obviously, the name that's going to come up a lot is Vasily Podkolzin, who was sent down to the Calder Cup to Abbotsford for the Calder Cup playoffs, is back as a black ace, played for the team at the end of the year, showed flashes, didn't score, didn't produce a lot of offense, but did show some flashes of productive play. That's certainly an option. I think another option here, and as we, you know, a lot of people texting in about Ian Cole, and yes, he's been very, very bad. Very, very bad in this series. His mistakes have been tough to watch. But do you really feel that much better with Noah Juulsen in the lineup? And it's not even just the, you know, the hit that takes him out of position and leads to the Ryan Nugent-Hopkins goal. Yeah, you know, Noah Juulsen, like, he's game. He's very physical. He works hard. But I didn't see him as clearly a better option than even Ian Cole in that game last night. So I don't think it's as clear-cut as sit Cole and put Juulsen in now that Carson Soucy is coming back into the lineup for Game 5. One thing I would consider is 11-7, right? Because I think part of this is, okay, if you're splitting up Mikheyev and Pettersson, one configuration that would make a lot of sense to me is you keep Miller, Suter, and Besser together, far and away your best line in the playoffs. You got to keep those three together. You keep them together at the top of your lineup. Put Bluger back with Joshua and Garland, a trio you know had success in the regular season. Do you go something like Lindholm in the middle with Pettersson on the wing? Maybe Nils Höglander gets back in, trying to boost some offense there. Lindholm gives you the defensive solidity down the middle still. And now at that point, you're using your four first-choice centers and really your five first-choice centers with Pius Suter all in the top three lines. So you don't really have an obvious fourth-line center. I don't know if they'd be crazy about playing Nils Åman in that role. So if you don't have an obvious fourth-line center, just roll with 11 forwards. Choose two of Phil DiGiuseppe, Sam Lafferty, Vasily Podkolzin, maybe Nils Åman for his penalty killing. Have them as your 10th and 11th forwards. Go all 7D with Soucy back. Keep Ian Cole and Noah Juulsen in, and then you look for moments to double shift Miller, to double shift Lindholm, maybe to double shift Pettersson if you're getting a little more from him. And you lessen the load a little bit on both Ian Cole and Noah Juulsen simultaneously, right? Because I don't know what the answer is put Noah Juulsen in and put Noah Juulsen in and ask him to take a regular shift against the Edmonton Oilers. I don't see that flipping the series. I think if you go 11-7, especially coming back home where you have last change, you have much more control over the matchup element. You can pick your spots. You can do some creative things to get different combinations out there. You can, again, as I said, dial back the minutes for both Ian Cole and Noah Juulsen a little bit, maybe get more efficiency from them in their minutes. I think that's something that at least bears a lot of consideration for the Canucks going into Game 5. Now, as you would note in that lineup I just ran out, no Ilya Mikheyev to speak of. It's just it's a tough watch right now. It's not happening for him. And the thing with Pettersson and Mikheyev is the offense hasn't been there. And then you look at what they're doing in the neutral zone on that Ryan Nugent-Hopkins goal. And yeah, a lot of the focus is on Noah Juulsen stepping up and delivering that hit and creating the 2-on-1. But as Rick Tocchet would say, those are soft plays, weak plays in the neutral zone from Pettersson and Mikheyev. I mean, especially Pettersson kind of waving his stick at Ekholm, right? Mikheyev just looks lost. So if you're not even getting that kind of baseline level of defensive responsibility from Ilya Mikheyev and Elias Pettersson together, you're not getting anything close to dangerous offensive generation, to consistent scoring chances from them, let alone actual goals. Well, where's the base? Like, what are you getting? And how can you justify keeping them together? And with Mikheyev at this point, I mean, we all know the goal scoring record. Now the defensive reliability is in question as well. He seems like a pretty obvious candidate to come out of the lineup, try to get some new legs in to see if that can give the team a little bit of a spark. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Tons and tons of thoughts coming in here. This one says, play Lekkerimäki. I think he's pretty far down the list of guys. Like, that's not, you know, hey, guy, welcome to North America. Hey, you played some in the AHL. That's awesome. Here's a really, really tight physical, emotional playoff series against Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. Go nuts. That's a tough spot. Very, very tough spot to put your top prospect in the organization in. We're not going to see that. But you go down the list. Vasily Podkolzin is certainly an option. Is Arshdeep Baines an option? He didn't exactly light the world on fire in his NHL audition earlier in the season. Given some of the physical limitations, I don't know if this is the spot you try Arshdeep Baines in. I think Vasily Podkolzin will be much higher on my list of guys to get in. But given how frustrated Rick Tocchet was with his team last night, and justifiably so, I also think that it's going to be a laundry list of potential solutions, potential options that he and his coaching staff go through, right? I think they're going to cast a pretty wide net, talking about different things they can try, different guys they can put in, different combinations they can try together. Trucker James texted, maybe try Hoggs and Linus Karlsson with Petey. Linus Karlsson, look, he came in and I think he exceeded expectations. But if your solution to, hey, we're trying to get Elias Pettersson going, is Linus Karlsson, that's a very, very tough spot to be in. I know I've heard some people say, do you put Pettersson with Höglander or Podkolzin? Again, not a ton of offense from Vasily Podkolzin at the NHL level, but at least that one is plausible to me. Now, I think in Game 5, again, that's plausible because you control the matchups, so you can be a lot more cautious with how you use that line, because you'd really have to shelter them defensively with Höglander and Podkolzin both out there. So can you kind of pick the really soft minutes, the offensive opportunities, if you went like that in Game 5? Maybe. I still think putting Bluger back between Joshua and Garland, keeping the top line as it is, Petey and Lindholm together, whoever the third guy is on that line, and then maybe you go 11-7 on the fourth line. All right, keep those texts coming in. Tons and tons of thoughts about what we saw last night, about what we heard from Rick talking about what the team should and could do going into Game 5 with the series tied 2-2. Johnny Lazarus, he covers the NHL for the Daily Faceoff. He's locked in on this series. Also, what's going on out east, especially with the Rangers and the Hurricanes. So we'll talk a little Canucks and Oilers. We'll talk some more Stanley Cup playoffs with Johnny Lazarus next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Vic Nizar. Have your say and join me on the People's Show with big takes and even bigger bets. Weekdays 3 to 4 on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I am Jamie Dodd. Rancer will be along in just half an hour's time. He'll come on at noon. We'll do the crossover of Donnie and Dolly as well. I am coming to you live from the Kintech studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver online at dunbarlumber.com. Johnny Lazarus from Daily Faceoff is going to join us momentarily, but yeah, keep sending those texts in as anticipated, as expected. You guys have a lot of thoughts about the game last night, about what Rick Tocchet had to say after the game as well about Elias Pettersson partly, also just in general about his team's performance, the lack of urgency, playing pause hockey, right? The Oilers coming out and just wanting it more. And that is something, to be fair, you see quite often in the playoffs, right? Where, yes, one team has the opportunity to really take a commanding lead or even close a series out when they're already up. The team that has the more legitimate sense of urgency and desperation is able to come out and be on the front foot, really, you know, put the pedal to the metal early in the game. But that, yes, it happens, but that doesn't make it fun to watch. That doesn't make it less frustrating for the coach to see. And that just was not at all what Rick Tocchet wanted to see from his team last night. And, you know, it's been interesting because obviously Rick Tocchet saying, you know, five or six passengers that we need to get going. Obviously, Elias Pettersson is part of that. He also says, you know, you can't win with 12 guys. And I was kind of coming at it the other way, right? Trying to think, okay, who are the 12 guys playing right now that Rick Tocchet has a lot of confidence in? That, in Rick Tocchet's point of view, understand it's the Stanley Cup playoffs and understand what that means for their game, how they have to play, how they have to go about their business. Who are those kind of 12 guys driving the bus, not being passengers right now? And there's some obvious names at the top of the list, right? Brock Besser continues to be a monster for them, setting up the tying goal that, you know, looked like it was going to send the overtime, send the game to overtime, and ultimately doesn't last night. But we all know what Brock Besser's done. Nikita Zadorov has been a beast for the Canucks in this playoffs. Connor Garland was excellent last night. He's a guy who very much understands the assignment. I didn't think it was JT Miller's strongest game. In fact, I thought he was poor last night. But in general, I think you would definitely put him in the 12 guys category of guys who understand what's going on, who understands what it's going to take to get wins, to win this series ultimately against the Edmonton Oilers. You know, that's four or five. But you go down the list looking for those 12 guys that Rick Tocchet has a lot of confidence in, and he starts to peter out a little bit at 9 or 10 before you're stretching for names a little bit there. All right, as mentioned, he covers the NHL for Daily Faceoff, and he joins me now. He is Johnny Lazarus. Johnny, thank you for doing this, man. How are you?
No problem, Jamie. I got to imagine I'm much better than Canucks fans today, although I'm not really in the best spot myself because I do support the New York Rangers, so I can feel the pain all around.
Yeah, it's funny how fast a series and the emotions can flip, right? Like, you know, Canucks are up now 2-1, a lot different than 3-0, right? But 2-1, you win on the road, and you've got this chance. They're changing their goalie. Calvin Pickard's coming in. You've got a chance to go up 3-1, and then that result happens last night, and just such a deflating way to lose after tying it late. And yeah, as you said, a lot of Canucks fans not doing so hot today. Now, we can get into the game, the actual stuff that happened on the ice, but for my money, the most interesting thing about last night was hearing Rick Tocchet speak after the game. And I don't know how much you had a chance to listen to it, but, you know, the line that stood out to me was, some guys, I don't know if they thought it was the playoffs. And as I said, like, you know, we always talk about how a coach calling his team soft is kind of one of the ultimate nuclear options that an NHL head coach has. And you have to be very, very careful about doing it because it's such a loaded word. But to me, saying, yeah, I don't know if these guys are aware it's the playoffs, like, that's right up there with calling his team soft. That's a really, really cutting critique of his team from Rick Tocchet.
Personally, I don't know if I fully agree. I don't know if it's a soft thing or if it's a mentally locked in thing. And we touched on this actually on our show, Morning Cup of Hockey, this morning. We went through the Edmonton Oilers, what was it, the second goal, the Nugent-Hopkins goal, yep. And then the Bouchard goal as well. And on both those clips, like, you watch the five guys on the ice. I believe it's Brock Besser, Elias Pettersson, and Mikheyev, Ilya Mikheyev, on the ice for the Nugent-Hopkins goal. And those three guys, they're kind of just going for a skate. Pettersson does a loop,
yep.
And lets Ekholm walk right through him. Brock Besser standing up straight the entire time. We actually thought that Noah Juulsen made a good play by stepping up to hit him because he thought he had support. And no one bent their knees and skated hard. So you look at a guy who's inserted into the lineup that wants to make a difference. He goes to throw a pretty good hit, separates the man from his puck, but there's no one backing him up. So, you know, I think that goes for the forwards on the ice where they got to lock in and be a little bit more desperate, I guess is the word you'd look for. So that's one goal. And then, you know, they tie the game up. Brock Besser gets a puck on net. It goes off Dakota Joshua, who's been phenomenal in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Their whole third line has been great. And then, you know, a minute later, you got all five guys below the hash marks in the defensive zone watching the puck. Everyone's sleeping. And you got Evan Bouchard, who's one of the most dangerous offensive defensemen in the game, wide open at the point. Leon Draisaitl has the puck, and I know Draisaitl's dangerous, but as the guy with the puck behind the net, he's the least dangerous guy on the ice. So I took that as a, you know, we got to lock it in here more than our team is soft kind of message, you know, and I think that's maybe a positive, I guess, if you're a Canucks fan, that the coach doesn't feel the team is soft, but you know, these are fixable mistakes, and that's something you can look at in a positive if you're a Canucks fan.
Yeah, and I wasn't saying that he was calling the team soft, just that it felt kind of like the same level of severity to me. You know what I mean? Where
for
it's
sure,
like saying
sure.
that you're...
It's a crutch you could lean on.
Like, you don't recognize the standard of the playoffs right now, and I think that play that you're talking about for the Nugent-Hopkins goal is the perfect example. Like, Pettersson skates right past Mattias Ekholm, and as Rick Tocchet would say, like, play the body. You know, have the will to go get the puck and make a play. And it's just, it's that will that, and it's not just Pettersson. I mean, he's in the spotlight here for obvious reasons. But as you said, Mikheyev, Besser even, who's been generally great, you can point to. It's just, it's those moments that I think Rick Tocchet's talking about where it's like, that's just not the playoffs. That might fly in the regular season on, you know, Tuesday night in Columbus, but it's not going to get it done in the playoffs against the Edmonton Oilers.
100%. I couldn't agree more. That's just really all it is. And you know, not to make it about the Rangers, but it's similar things. You know, you look at the Rangers game 5 against Carolina, and it's mental errors that beat themselves. Like, you look at the Canucks last night, they beat themselves, you know. And I think you can say that a lot about teams that are at this point of the playoffs. Like, everyone in the second round belongs to be there, and they're good hockey teams. So it's about which team makes the least amount of mistakes is going to win, typically, at the end of the day.
Yeah, and that's a good point, because I think one of the things that has made the Canucks successful, even without getting a lot from Elias Pettersson, is they haven't made those really kind of five-alarm mistakes, right? And they've been able to capitalize when the other team has. But last night, you know, as you point out on the Ryan Nugent-Hopkins goal, and then certainly on the game winner as well, it's those defensive breakdowns that they've been, for the most part, been able to avoid through these playoffs. And you know, I think you make a great point, too, about everyone zeroed in on Draisaitl behind the net instead of taking a man, getting in a passing lane, anything like that. And I know Rick Tocchet has spoke about maybe they're almost paying too much respect to guys like Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, right? And sometimes it's the, you know, just the quick icing when you get the puck in the defensive zone rather than trying to make a play. And sometimes it's, I think it's an example like that where you're so locked in on Draisaitl, you lose track of the other guys on the ice. But it feels like it must be a tricky balance for players to strike, because you have to be hyper aware of those two when they're out there. They're so dangerous. And yet, if you start treating them differently than any other player, you know, doing things differently than you would in any other situation, you can get burned by it pretty easily.
100%. I also do think that I believe it was Evander Kane that made a great play on that forecheck, right?
Yep.
Like, he's the one who won that battle and got that puck back. Like, you know, that's just, I don't know if it's a guy wanting it more, but, you know, that's credit where credit is due to Evander Kane to get in there. I don't remember who the defenseman was that he knocked down, but you know, he wins that battle, gets possession for Edmonton, and, you know, they just kind of roll from there. But, Yeah, I mean, listen, you always want to have a little bit of respect for the best players on the ice. You don't want to look bad or get burnt. You know, I just know that from my own experience as a player going up against guys in college, like, you know, a McAvoy or, you know, Clayton Keller, guys like that. You're always a little more cautious when they're on the ice because you don't want to look stupid and have it look bad on video the next day. But, you know, I think that's something that I guess Vancouver is going to learn throughout the series. Like, if you're going to lose to Edmonton, you want someone else to beat you. You don't want to lose to McDavid and Draisaitl. You know, I think that's probably the mindset that they're in, right? Like, if we're going to beat this team or if this team's going to beat us, it better be someone else beating us. It can't be McDavid and Draisaitl, you know, because those are the two guys that run that whole team, basically. So, I don't know. It's a tricky one, and thank God I'm not an NHL coach because I wouldn't know how to figure out stopping those two. You know, I think sometimes it could also be the case of, like, we know we're not going to stop them, but how do we slow them down? Mm-hmm. You know, that's something too that is somewhat talked about. But yeah, it's tough. I mean, listen, you got to give Vancouver a lot of respect. Rick Tocchet's done a phenomenal job, and you know, it's a 2-2 series. I think and most people would have had this one ending in 5 games in favor of Edmonton. And you know, Vancouver now has a chance to go back home and take a big 3-2 lead in the pivotal game 5.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing where, again, as I said, you know, certainly at the start of the year, right, if you had said, hey, second round, you'll be 2-2 deadlocked with the Edmonton Oilers, people would have been over the moon. I think even at the start of the series, people would have been pretty happy with that. It just feels like a letdown because of the way game 4 ended in Edmonton and really how they played throughout the game. I want to get to the other series, but quickly, just on the Canucks, you know, we have Elias Pettersson so under the microscope here. We have really for the last few months, really since he signed his extension. And obviously, you know, Rick Tocchet acknowledging again, yeah, he's one of those passengers I'm talking about. He needs to get going. There's not much more to say about it. I'm always curious for people from outside the market. I mean, what are you seeing? What really stands out to you when you're watching these games from Elias Pettersson?
Well, he's the easy target, right? It's just you know, I don't watch Canucks games as closely as I would like a Ranger game, you know, where you're really kind of critiquing. You know, there's a part of you or a part of me that watches that series. You know, while I am talking about it and covering it, mostly it's for entertainment. Mm-hmm. But from what I've seen out of Pettersson, it's just everything is too easy against him. You know, a puck battle, he's losing it a little too easy. Like, where's that little extra FU that you need in the playoffs? You know, like, it's so hard to compare, but, like, even a guy like Willie Nylander, who can be a comparable to Pettersson, has that, right? Like, he has that extra FU in his game that Pettersson hasn't seemed to have found yet. And, you know, I'm trying to compare, obviously, Swedish guys and Canadian markets, so I feel like that could be a fair one. You know, you might disagree with that, but, you know, Nylander is one of those guys that you know what to expect in a playoff game. And you know, out of those four guys, the core four, like, Nylander maybe is the best playoff performer, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I know he gets criticized in the regular season for taking a game off here or there, but, you know, that's a guy who signed an extension. Pettersson signed an extension, and my co-host Colby Cohen says it all the time. You make your money in the regular season, but you make your legacy in the playoffs, you know? So if this is who Pettersson is, like, that sucks, you know? It feels like he's getting that Mitch Marner treatment from Leafs fans just because you expect so much out of a guy. And when they don't perform, it's frustrating. And it's almost like, hey, we're at this point, it's 2-2 in the series, and our best player hasn't even shown up yet.
Yeah.
You know, imagine how good we can be if he gives that extra. But from everything I've seen, everything just seems a little bit too easy. And, you know, I feel like in the playoffs, it's got to be harder. It's got to be give the extra inch. You know, all the cliches you can kind of think of, but they're true. And that's why they are cliche, because they're true. And because history always says, like, this is what you have to do to win this time of year.
Yeah, we're getting the Mitch Marner comparison a lot from our listeners and from Canucks fans. Now, like, I guess the silver lining is it's a repeated playoff thing with Mitch Marner, right? This is Elias Pettersson's first real taste of the playoffs, so you don't want to jump to conclusions, but as you said, it's been way too easy against him so far. Okay, as you mentioned, I know you're most locked in on the Rangers and the Canes. Rangers get up to that 3-0 series lead. You know, you start to taste the conference finals. Everyone's writing the postmortems for the Hurricanes again. Now, all of a sudden, it's 3-2. They're going back to Carolina for game six tomorrow in Thursday. Like, how tense are things around the New York Rangers now, given the situation they're in?
I mean, around the fan base, you'd think the series is already over. But with the team, the vibes are high. Listen, I mean, you know, I actually just sat down one-on-one with Jonathan Quick about, like, 2 hours ago after practice and spoke to him because he's a guy that's been in both situations, right? He comes back from down 3-0 in 2014 with the Kings, beats the Sharks, then goes on to win the Stanley Cup. And then he also was, you know, the Conn Smythe winner in 2012 when they're up 3-0 on the Devils. The Devils win game 4 and 5. Then they close it out in 6, and then he backed up last year in Vegas where they go up 3-0 on Dallas. Dallas wins 4 and 5, and then Vegas closes it out in 6. Like, you know, he's been on both sides of this, and his mentality is nothing changes. It's the same approach, whether you just won 2, whether you just lost 2. The playoffs are day by day, and I know, again, that's like another cliche, but it's true, and it's the mentality you have to have. Like, he literally said it does not matter. Like, tomorrow is a new game, and if you really think about this series too, and I know people kind of gave Rod Brindamore crap for him saying, like, you know, we're down 3-0, but we're playing good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I actually agreed with him, and I'm probably one of the few who did. Like, this series is 3-2 going back to Carolina, and, like, it could have been this way the whole time. You know, like, I know that 3-0 lead is commanding objectively, but it wasn't a commanding 3-0 lead. You know, the only thing that was making it so commanding was that Carolina Hurricanes couldn't score in power play. Like, outside of that, they were playing pretty damn good.
Yep.
And you know, that's kind of what Rod was saying. So they found one on the power play. It gave them life in game 4. And in game 5, they're the better team. The Rangers did not really show up. So, you know, again, similar to what you were saying before about Canucks fans, Chris Kreider said it too. If you told us before the series we'd be going to Carolina 3-2, like, they were in pretty good position, which they are. So, you know, all year long, they've been – very good coming back from a loss. They never lost three. Actually, they lost 3 games in a row one time this year, but it was a 4-game losing streak. That was the only time they lost more than 2 in a row. It was in January. So history has shown that this team has had the ability to bounce back, and who's to say they can't tomorrow night?
Yeah, 2 overtime wins in there to go up 3-0, right? So I totally understand what you're saying and where Brindamore was coming from. And, hey, I'm looking at it. All right, Canucks and Oilers tied 2-2, 3-2 between Boston and Florida, 3-2 between the Rangers and the Hurricanes. Dallas is up 3-1, and Colorado's in a bit of a struggle there. But the way I look at it is hopefully we get some Game 7s out of this because the second round has been great so far. Johnny, appreciate the time, man. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you. Good luck, and it'd be fun to see the Canucks get to the next round.
So. Oh, man, would it ever. Would it ever. Thanks, buddy.
Thank you.
That is Johnny Lazarus covering the NHL for Daily Faceoff. And got a few minutes before break here. As mentioned, Drance is going to join us on the other side, and we will do the crossover as well. But Rick Tocchet, as I was conducting that interview, doing media availability down at Rogers Arena, day off for the team in terms of skating, in terms of on-ice activities, but still talking with the media, of course, during the playoffs. Some interesting quotes coming out from what Rick Tocchet is saying to the media. These are per Patrick Johnston at Post Media. So this one on Thatcher Demko, he's improved immensely in the last 72 hours. And PJ says that's talking on Demko's status. Still doesn't say when a target date is, but starting to sound like a late series return is on the horizon. I know Rick Dhaliwal also saying he's hearing a lot of positive momentum for a potential Thatcher Demko return in this series. And hey, we're going at least 6 games. Would not shock anyone, I think, at this point if we go 7 games. I still am not betting on it, but interesting to hear more quotes, more tidbits of information there pointing in the direction of Thatcher Demko being a realistic possibility in this series. The other very interesting quote or pair of quotes from Rick Tocchet. Now, somebody texted in earlier about Jonathan Lekaramäki, of course, Black Ace, up with the club right now after having finished his season in Abbotsford. And I said, you know, I just don't see it. Asking a young player, one of your top prospects with just very, very limited North American experience to come in and play against the Edmonton Oilers in a tight, physical, emotional playoff series. To me, that's just too tall of an order. Rick Tocchet, he's not saying it's going to happen, but he's not saying it's not going to happen either. Here again, per PJ, I think everyone is in play in the Stanley Cup playoffs. That's Rick Tocchet on the Lekaramäki option. And then later on, This quote, which I absolutely love from Rick Tocchet, "I'm swinging the bat. I'm not scared." That's Tocchet speaking further on the possibility of Lekaramaki. And PJ goes, isn't saying he's in, but makes it clear he's really thinking about it. That's Rick Tocchet at least considering the possibility of looking for that offensive boost from Jonathan Lekaramaki. And, I mean, what a quote from Rick Tocchet. "I'm swinging the bat. I'm not scared." And as I said, I don't think Rick Tocchet is the kind of coach who's going to throw up his hands and say, "Hey, it's on the players. I've done everything I can. They got to go and do it now." Rick Tocchet's going to look for solutions. He's going to try to find tweaks to get the most out of his team. I would still be very surprised if that includes Jonathan Lekaramaki in the lineup for Game 5. But as Rick Tocchet said, he's going to swing the bat. He's not scared to go up there and take a home run cut and try to find a way to win this series. Another quote, this one per Rob Williams at Daily Hive, says, "Doesn't sound like Tocchet is interested in messing with the Miller or Lindholm lines. Pettersson's line mates will have to come from somewhere else." So I suggested earlier in the show, do you go back to Bluger with Joshua and Garland and put Elias Lindholm with Elias Pettersson? Doesn't sound like that's an option for Rick Tocchet. I can understand that, given that your two best lines have been Lindholm with Joshua and Garland, Miller with Besser and Suter. I understand the reluctance to break them up. If that is the case, I think you got to assume Nils Höglander is going to get back in there alongside Elias Pettersson as they look for more consistent offense. And I know Höglander was not good, has not been good in the playoffs, but he's still the most talented offensive option you have to draw back into the lineup. Could you see Vasily Podkolzin alongside that pair? As I said, you'd have to really shelter them, but look, you're back home. You control the matchups a lot more. Does it become more feasible to shelter them, to get them out there in those prime offensive opportunities, to reduce the load that they have to manage defensively against the high-flying Edmonton Oilers? Another quote from Rob Williams here. Tocchet says JT Miller texted him today to say sorry about his game last night. Yeah, JT was off. Now, it's not going to dominate the conversation to the same degree as Elias Pettersson, obviously, because with Petey, it's a consistent pattern of behavior of performance, right? Of not meeting the standard in the playoffs. JT, it's more of a one-off, but I think it's absolutely fair to note that he struggled last night. He did not have a good game. When Rick Tocchet talks about pause hockey, not moving your feet, yeah, typically that's been applied to Elias Pettersson. I thought we saw that from JT Miller. And with Miller, he has the hockey IQ and the kind of cerebral ability to slow the game down. And, you know, you see it on the power play, the way he can pick apart defenses. But he works best when he's going full speed, when he's being power forward, dynamo JT Miller. And when he starts to slow down, glide a little bit more, try to slow the game down a little bit, I think that's when JT Miller gets into trouble. I think that's part of what happened last night. He needs to keep the pedal to the metal. That's when he's his most exciting. That's when he's at his absolute best as well. So lots of interesting tidbits coming out from Canucks media availabilities today from Rick Tocchet. I know Elias Pettersson is talking to the media as well, so we'll see what he has to say. We'll try to play the full audio from Rick Tocchet a little bit later in the show, but we will take a break now. As mentioned, Drancer's going to hop on at noon, and we will do the crossover with our pals Donnie and Dolly on the other side here. It is Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.